However, the tomb that he took us to that was sitting right smack dab in front of the Khufu pyramid, or the tomb of Khai.
Uh-huh.
Now, Khai was the builder of the Khufu pyramid and the pyramids of his father. Khai was Zahi calls him a dwarf. He was a small person. Inside, and nobody from the West had ever been inside this tomb. We were the first from the West who had ever been inside the tomb, and one of those pictures is on Kestikos' website tonight.
Just tell us, how big was the tomb?
The tomb is about as big as a garage.
That's okay. Pretty good size, isn't it?
Yeah, good size. And by the way, it had a secret door in this tomb, and in that secret, behind the door, was a statue of Khai, which has been taken out and put in the museum. And this Khai was a beloved character, a beloved builder, and Zahi read the hieroglyphs off the wall like he was reading a book. He didn't stutter an inch. He was just reading them as he went. It was incredible. A stunning performance by Zahi Awas. And it was just for me and John.
Little show, like I said, showmanship, huh?
Oh, yeah. But he is very, 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 very good.
I mean, when he opened up that tomb, I kind of considered him the Geraldo Rivera looking for Al Capone's vault. Remember that?
I do remember that. But I kind of get the feeling that Zahi Hawass could put a spade in the dirt anywhere in the Giza Plateau, and they would find a tomb. I know that Yosef Mansour, when he took me to Karnak back up in the Upper Nile, he told me an incredible tale. He said that he has been with every one of the people who build new homes and new excavations in Karnak. He said every single home that had a foundation dug found ancient relics and evidences of antiquity. Every single foundation. And that's how many discoveries are left
to be made. Yeah, that's exciting. Well, when you look at the pyramids, for example, what's around the vicinity? I mean, have they kind of built houses and businesses and buildings up close? How much? What's the range around there?
Oh, we're talking about a good mile away before. I mean, this is a protected area.
Okay.
My hotel room, though, when I got out of my the princess owned the hotel, by the way. It was a beautiful hotel. Get up in the morning and you see the pyramids out your door, and it was absolutely spectacular. It was incredible, and there you can see them from a long distance away. But one of the things that I noticed, having stood there right on the Giza Plateau, is that, and you don't see that on television very much, is that the Sphinx really is the carving of one of the rock outcroppings, and there are several. This is not a flat desert where the pyramids are.
Mm-hmm.
This is really a stone. It is a rise. It's a mound. And there are stone mounds of the size of football fields that stick out of the ground periodically all the way around the pyramid. To have carved the Sphinx out of a stone mound was just carving one of those stone mounds. This is not a flat desert right there.
Were you able to touch the Sphinx, touch the pyramids? I mean, could you get
everyone?
Now, tell me the feeling when you did that. I mean, to know that these could be 5, maybe 10,000 years old, maybe more, who knows?
Well, obviously looking at the macrocosm, instantly I thought, how in the world did they cut these stones so perfectly? How could they have communicated to each other to cut the stones so perfectly? What organism, what kind of organization could have been in place to do this? Now, Zahi is adamant about the fact that the technology, the communication, and the engineering skills were available during that time. And when the earthquake happened in 2,500 years B.C. and caused the pyramid builders to stop building out of mm-hmm. stone and starting to build out of mud bricks, that much of that technology may have died. But that doesn't mean that the technology did not exist at that point.
Well, let me ask you about that. That's a very important thing you bring up, Glenn. Is Zahi open to the fact that the technology of the time might have been Egyptian, might have been advanced, but somehow got lost or forgotten or who knows what?
I think that's exactly what he thinks.
I could buy that theory. I could buy that theory that they had incredible technology and somehow something happened on this planet and we've lost it. It's gone.
I think we've had disasters on many different fronts. I noticed, for example, one thing that was totally impressionable, from made an impact that was a monumental importance to me. As I was standing in the Temple of Karnak in Luxor, and as they were telling me about how the big doors that looked like doors to something on King Kong's Island, you know, I mean, the doors to Karnak Temple were huge. As they opened those doors and they led all the way back to the Holy of Holies, back in the back of the temple where the various and sundry pharaohs had been for 1,000 years, worshiping the priests of Amun and in the ceremonies of Amun, they always carried these pharaohs in on these big boats. And you say to yourself, well, the boats, they're worshiping their ability to sail into the heavens. And my thought was, well, okay, but no. These people worship boats because they sailed the world with impunity. Egypt was the center of a great merchant society which took the wealth of Africa around the world and brought the wealth of the world back to Africa on vessels.
And what are the possibilities that the Atlanteans may have gone to Egypt and got things going? Maybe?
Zahi would say, if I find the evidence, I'll give it to you, and George can do it on the program.
You got a deal.